Real Business Owners.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast. This is episode 62 with myself, Trevor Cowley. Kel Goodman, as always.
What's up?
Guys, today we have a special guest for you. He's one of our Arte brothers. This individual has a list of titles, right? Entrepreneur, podcaster, speaker, business coach, author. Does it continue?
Car racer, car builder, photographer, website developer. I evolve a lot.
There you go.
Yeah, you do, man.
You have to buy a book on everything that Tony's probably done, and it's a
long
one.
That's why I follow his content, dude. I like it. Dude, I get things out of it. Like, I remember watching some of your videos, just giving guys tips on how to properly even just do a video. You know?
Just simple things.
Where to hold the camera. And I'm like, dude, you know what? It's really good.
Well, that's when
I first started following your content. I was like, dude, he's got a lot of good little tips on this stuff.
Well, what's crazy about it is we were just getting into it. A lot of people, they want to give like the big nuggets and then they get stuck at, man, what can I do to blow somebody's mind? Because they just skip over all the simple shit.
Yeah.
And it's crazy when you actually start giving like, hey, do this or try this or whatever. And then the engagement that you get, they're like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. And you're just like, I thought that was common sense. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, you're like, am I even giving good information or valuable information? But it is, because just because it's common sense to you doesn't mean it's common sense to everybody else.
Dude,
right?
Always. And there's a funny thing of the book that I wrote, Side Hustle Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
When I was contriving that book in my mind, it was about operating at a high level of entrepreneurship strategy, because I've been in business for 20 years. Like, you guys have been in business. We operate at a different level because we've been embedded in that for a long time.
Right.
So when I thought about writing a book on entrepreneurship, I was thinking immediately of the high level strategies, and I was going to teach about things that I was operating at the moment. Those are things we're excited about, things we learned, the newest things, right?
Yeah.
And so I was good enough and smart enough to go back to my audience and say, hey, I'm about to write a book on entrepreneurship. What questions would you guys like asked? Or what would you like answered?
Getting that feedback.
And the questions they started asking were very simple, fundamental, get started. What's an LLC versus S-Corp? Mm. How do you do marketing? What's a good web page look like? How do you name your company? Things that I really operated with in the background, right, that we all operate in the background.
You were so far removed from all that stuff that you're like, you want to deliver real good information and valuable information. But now, as you were saying that, I started thinking, I'm like, how many businesses are really operating at a high level anyways? There's more businesses operating down here through that first 5-year phase or 10-year phase or whatever than that are operating a $5 million or $10 million or $20 million company. So if you're trying to get to the masses, then some of the basic information is probably the best information to get to the largest group of people.
That's right.
Because by the time you've built a big business, there's some cool strategies that you can learn, obviously, from other people that have built some cool shit. But at the same time, they probably might already know some of the same things that you know, right? And so a lot of new entrepreneurs are just lost. Even with our Instagram page, there's some of the very basic questions like, what do I do here? Or how do I do this? And it's just like, oh, geez, you know, here's what you do. Like, and they're, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I implemented that and that was just huge. It just changed everything for me. And you're just like, geez, maybe we just need to break it down. And I hate to say it, but dumb it down a little bit just to help everybody, right? Because I think a lot of people skip the basics, right? Because they're trying to build a business fast and they're trying to bring in all this revenue and they're almost thinking too big too soon. Absolutely. To where they're trying to jump to the heavy shit. But that heavy shit don't work unless you have a good foundation of all the basics.
That's absolutely right. They get lost in the details and they don't understand how to go from A to B. And, you know, we're all in Arte Syndicate and we learn from Andy, you know, and Ed.
Yeah.
Those guys are operating at a very, very high level.
Oh, yeah.
And the things they teach us are a very, very high level that we're not even ready for at the time. We could take some of it.
Yeah.
But I would say 70% of the things they teach us are for when you have 100 plus employees.
It's true, man.
Yeah.
So they don't bridge the gap of the simple things that got them to where they are.
Yeah.
And that's what they say. Take notes on this stuff. This stuff might not even apply to you right now.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. But it will apply to you eventually if you're in business long enough or you build a big enough business.
Yeah.
And right? So I think that's a thing that a lot of people miss as well. When they're gathering information or listening to content, they skip over stuff that doesn't apply to them immediately.
Yes.
And they're not taking the notes. They're going to get to that point, right? So they're just, what's applicable now? It's all good. You need that stuff too, but you also need to be preparing yourself and setting you up for this phase over here too, while you're building that foundation, right? It's almost like building a house. Yeah, you're working on the foundation, but you already know what you're going to be doing next, 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 and it's already all planned out. So make sure that you guys that are listening to this episode, if there's information that's said in any of our podcasts, or if you ever go watch Tony has a great Instagram page. He has a great Facebook group, you know, all of that stuff. And we'll share that information with you, obviously, before we end this episode. But that's just a little nugget that's very simple and easy. Take notes on basically everything so that you have a little Rolodex of information that you can always turn back to at one point or another when you hit that level.
That's the key. Going back and reviewing those notes years later. If you need an example, anybody that's watching this or listening to this, if you have read a business book and you've been in business for a couple of years, I challenge you to go back and read some of the books that you read 2 years ago. And what's going to be funny is you're going to find that it's a completely different book. You're going to start to realize things that you need that apply today that you kind of disregarded as like, oh, that's a good idea. I'll come back to that. I'll revisit that. And you kind of just shovel it off to the side. And then you go read a book 2, 3, 5 years later, and you read it again, you're like, oh my God, there's so much content in here. I just didn't even miss it. Did I even read this? Yeah. That's the things you start to ask yourself.
Well, the only thing that's popping out at you is what's relevant to you today.
Yeah.
So what's relevant to you 2 years ago is not going to be relevant to you today.
That's right.
So you're going to pick up new information that will benefit you today, even if you read the exact same book 2 years ago.
The things you'll pull out of it are just what's relevant at the time. And it's always going to be changing. So.
And your mindset's different too. You're thinking differently, so you're viewing things differently, and you're taking in information differently. Right. And I think that that's, oh, I've read that book. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just always looking for something new rather than reviewing the old as well. Just real quick, let's do a snapshot of just a little bit of your background, just to kind of frame everything up for the podcast. I know at one point you had a high paying corporate job and you removed yourself from it. Just kind of explain that real quick and kind of give everybody a quick background on you.
Great question. So you guys heard the intros, a lot of different titles I've had, a lot of different skill sets I've picked up along my years. That was a necessity of growing up lower middle class.
Okay.
And I was taught by my two hardworking parents that if I wanted to achieve something, I need to go figure out how to do that myself and go figure it out. So I put myself through engineering school because I was on that track to try to make six figures, just like everybody. You need to be a doctor, lawyer, or engineer. Yeah. I'm a creative person. I've always been the hands-on building things. Worked in the oil and gas industry even at age 18 as a laborer, working grinding pipe and stick welding and doing all these kind of things in the sun. And I said, you know, after this for a few summers in the Houston area, it's like I kind of want to go work with those people with the air-conditioned buildings they get to wear normal clothes. Like, what is all this? I'm in coveralls and a hard hat, and they're in there. And it's like, that's probably a better idea. So that's why I pursued engineering degree. I like cars. I'm a car guy. So I said, okay, well, what engineering has to do with cars? This is how oblivious I was. And, I think mechanical engineers work on cars or design cars. Like, okay, well, if I get that degree, maybe I can go work on cars or design cars.
Because that was your passion.
Yeah. I said, okay. So that's the degree that I pursued. And then when I got out, I started to interview with some of the people in Detroit. And honestly, the pay was half the pay of Houston. Houston's the oil capital of the world.
Yeah.
That's my hometown.
Yeah.
And they were going to pay me double to stay home. And I could actually drive the cars that I was wanting to design instead of just design them. I said, that's a no-brainer. I'm going to stay here in Houston. And the thing is that I always wanted to go back to the automotive industry, but I was in the engineering oil and gas industry. So I created side businesses that were related to performance cars and automotive, built a massive community, not intending to build a massive community. It's just the leadership and the cultural and the things that we grew this into the largest of its kind. So to give you an idea, if anyone is in automotive performance websites, LS1 Tech was the site that I started in 2001. And it grew to over 300,000 registered members. So obviously when you have that many eyeballs and you have 100,000 unique visitors per day, I designed all the web. I did everything in the graphic design because I'm the creative guy. I'm the artist guy. I had a business partner that was a corporate recruiter. He was the cold caller. He would go around calling advertisers and go, hey, you got to come check out this community that we had. So we had a great teamwork there. He was actually in Chicago. I was in Houston. We never had a business meeting in person 7 years, even when we sold the company.
That's awesome.
So the thing is it's virtual stuff. We were doing in the early 2000s. Yeah. I mean, to give you guys a frame of reference, we're talking about books. 4-hour work week came out a couple years after I sold that company. So that was a virtual business I did before Tim Ferriss was even known. And when you think about that kind of stuff, it's like we were doing so many things and this thing was growing. But here's the one thing I want to point out for the listeners. The company sold for millions of dollars as a side business. It took less than an hour of my time per day.
Yeah.
The thing is that we didn't intend to make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
It was our goal was small because my partner and I both had six-figure careers.
Yeah.
We just wanted a place to hang out online and talk about cars. So specifically Corvettes, Camaros, Firebirds, anything in the General Motors performance portfolio. And our initial goal when we started that website was to make $500 a month. Yeah. And the funny thing is that is the car note that I had. I had a Trans Am and he had a Camaro SS. This $500 a month car note. And he were like, man, if we build this website and we make $500 a month extra each, it's like having a free car.
Because
we already have this career. Yeah. We already have a successful career by most accounts. And so this thing just kept growing. And honestly, we didn't even start it as an LLC probably 6-7 months into it when we were making $10,000 a month profit. We're like, man, this is like one of the
this is like a business.
Yeah. So we need to like take it a little bit more serious. So then we had to go figure out what an LLC was, figure all that stuff out, trademarks, everything involved around businesses and growing it and getting the right people to be supportive on staff. We had a staff of about 75 people, and we started to build the relationships with our advertising vendors. So we made money from advertising. We had over 150 advertising accounts, even General Motors, Chevrolet, Cadillac, they all advertised with us. We got media credentials to be just like Car and Driver or Hot Rod Magazine.
Were they paying you just like a per month basis to have that ad on your site?
Absolutely.
Or was it like per click or anything
like
that?
Just static one. And that's why we were so cheap. The thing about that was when I sold the website, we had over 100,000 people visiting per day.
Wow.
That's equivalent to the circulation of a magazine for an entire month, like a high-level magazine. We saw more traffic in one day, and then we also beat them on the speed and the price for marketing because at that point, a half-page ad in a magazine at the high levels was about $8,000 for a half page. We were only charging $375 a month.
Right. Mm.
So we were 100x
It was a no-brainer.
So yeah, how many no's
did you get when you were reaching out to people? Probably not many because of the price point, right?
None. We were just basically pioneering how to monetize these forums and – we even built we had the banner ads on the side. We built like algorithms to switch them around randomly every time you clicked on the mouse.
That's so cool.
Nobody ever had priority. And then we started going, hey, what would they pay extra for featured, a little bit bigger banner? Or maybe their employees that log in will have a different color name when they log in so people know them as a sponsor. So we were always playing on ways to upsell them. And about $500 a month is what we were making from each of them we sold. But here's the other thing. We grandfathered people in to incentivize them to join. So if you came in early, you're paying $175 a month forever.
Mm. Yeah.
And we said, okay, we're going to lock you in. We always held that. And even 7 years into it, when we finally sold the company, we kept everybody's rates exactly the same they came in. But if they left or they didn't pay us for a month,
they came back in
at the newest rate.
Yeah.
So that also incentivized them to pay on time and not lose that
position.
Dude, it's huge.
That's smart. Super smart.
We've done that with our accounting firm as we've raised our prices. So in accounting, obviously, your inventory is time, right? So the more clients you have, the less time you have. So therefore, our prices go up, right? Because we can only handle so many customers. But the old customers, it's not like we're going back and saying, hey, instead of $300 a month, now you're going to pay $700 because then they'd say, screw you, I'll go somewhere else. It just doesn't feel good. But throughout that process in that 7 years, did you have people approaching you to buy it, or was this an idea that you had, like, hey, let's eventually sell it? Like, tell us a little bit about your guys' mindset and when you guys really came to the conclusion, like, hey, we could sell this thing because people are asking, or if it was your own idea, or tell us a little bit about that.
So here's the funny part about it. Yeah, there was always people approaching us, hey, would you like to sell your website? Mm-hmm. And being owners of a business, you're always like, well, tell me what you think it's worth, because we're always want to be curious, right? We didn't know anything about valuation or mergers and acquisitions. So basically, a lot of people would come out, well, I'll give you $100,000. Like, dude, we're making $400,000 profit per year. Like, okay, thanks for the offer, but we're not interested.
Yeah, I'll give you a banner for that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, you're wanting to advertise. Yeah. I thought you wanted to I didn't know when you said purchase. I didn't know you wanted to purchase an ad.
That's our premium package.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what that showed is that there were very few people out there that understood the business behind forums or online mm-hmm. communities. They just had no idea of what the kind of money that we were the making. Potential. And we never, you don't flash that out there.
Yeah, I mean, right.
we had a pretty good lifestyle if you were watching the photos and the things that we were driving, but nobody knew what we were making. Plus, to compound that with the salaries that we were making also in our professions,
yeah,
it's like, they're doing pretty good, guys. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's pretty easy. So people would come across and we would just basically see their offer and they're usually lowball, something like that, because they didn't know. They had no idea.
Yeah.
And eventually this one company came around and they're like, hey, we bought Corvette Forum, we bought Audi World or whatever, like the two big ones that were equal to us. And we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
If those people sold, maybe these people are onto something. Mm, so we just basically said the same thing. Well, what do you guys think it's worth?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, here's a funny thing is like, we didn't know anything about valuation or EBITDA or things like that or multiples. And so my partner and I were like, man, we made a lot of money on this. Like, we're doing pretty well. I just want to pay off my house. And he's like, yeah, that's cool too. And so here's the funny thing is our number. So what would you take to exit? You know, my partner's John. And John's like, I don't know, man. What if we – how about $400,000 a piece, like $800,000? Like, if they offer that, maybe we'll consider talking to him. So the first offer was $1.8 million.
Play it cool.
Like, hey, John, I think we need to get a lawyer. We need to hire someone that knows this stuff. And then, of course, the lawyer's like, the first offer is always the lowest. What do you really want? It's like, we want to clear $1 million after taxes.
Yeah.
Capital gains back then was 15%. So we need 2.3, and then we'll both be millionaires, like, after taxes.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go send that to them. They're like, okay.
that was too easy.
Come to find out, after that whole year-long process of doing the acquisition, that was a long, strenuous thing. I learned a lot about acquisitions.
Yeah.
Our value of our website is probably worth closer to $3 million.
Right. Uh-huh.
So they were pretty quick on jumping on that. Yeah. So when you understand that, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but now I know, and now I help other people.
Yeah, it is.
And honestly, all that experience I've had from being involved in that, because very few businesses ever sell. Only 1%, they say, actually sell for something with a profit. Yeah.
Right.
And the average exit is about $250,000 for most businesses, small business owners.
Yeah.
So we did pretty well on that experience level. And I was able to take that into corporate and help mergers and acquisitions with oil companies and buying out some of the suppliers and engineering firms and things like that. So I've had a lot of different corporate experience just because of that. Even at Chevron, when I was a staff there as a project manager, their legal team had me come in and look over contracts and things like that for their M&As. And because I knew how to apply the practical and the application side of things to the legal. I was a good bridge in between those. So that was an interesting way to go through the career as a project management, just managing hundreds of millions of dollars and international projects. And the things I've managed at the corporate level, the high levels, actually make small business very simple to me.
Yeah, that's cool. So let me ask you this. on because we wanted to talk about the exit, right, as well, because just out of curiosity, because not a lot of people know about that, because it's probably not in their foreseeable future either, right?
We haven't been through it, but we've talked about it. Like, we own several companies. Some of them were like, man, we don't ever want to sell. We're very, passionate. It's like our baby. And then some were like, dude, we are building this just to sell it, but we've never done that.
Yeah. So in terms of like an evaluation, how did they evaluate it? Did you get, because you hear certain companies get 3X, 5X, 7X, tech companies that have residual based up. Obviously, that's a higher exit when you've got those monthlies coming in based upon the consistency versus a product that's like you have to sell to the customer every single time.
Yeah.
And that's just a one-time purchase. That's obviously going to be a lesser of an exit, maybe a 3X rather than a 7X. So in your guys' situation, versus were they going off of the amount each year that you were profiting? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is a great topic because most people aren't aware of this.
Yeah.
Most of the people sell their businesses as a reaction to something. Maybe a partner wants to leave, or someone dies, or somebody gets sick, or maybe you just get old and you want to retire and you go, okay, I'm going to sell my company. So then you start to look for a broker and put your thing on the market, and you realize that most people understand their business is worth zero.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I made all this money and I've had a good career. Like, why is it worth zero? It's because it's not worth anything to a buyer.
Yeah.
It's worth something to you. It's not worth anything to a buyer because they don't want to have to step in your shoes and show up in your office and work. They want to actually hire somebody that's got processes and systems in place that they can hire a CEO to replace you.
If you're only making $150,000 a year and they want a CEO to run the company, you're going to pay somebody $100,000-$150,000 a year to run the company. So therefore, it's not really valuable to that individual. And I think some people make the mistake that they value their company based upon the gross revenue, like we were talking about the other day. Like, oh, we do $1 million a year.
Doesn't matter.
Well, 5X is $5 million. And it's like $1 million a year. But if you only make $100,000 or $200,000 off, it's not worth that much money.
So the multiple comes around based on the – there's a lot of factors. One, the recurring revenue, like you said. When you have that recurring revenue, you got inflow coming in, cash flow that's basically on a subscription tile, or we were pre-selling ads for one-year packages. So we could show them the money that was coming in based on, you know, basically it was all staggered. It wasn't like January 1, we're billing everybody. No, some people join in March, some people join it. So their year starts different. So we have long recurring revenue. We also had the server logs and all the email addresses for all the members. So when you have hundreds of thousands of members, that's a lot of value for them too, because they can actually go sell ads to those people.
Yeah.
And then we also had a branding that was very strong. We're number one in the industry for General Motors performance cars. Mm. So the barrier to entry to be number one is very hard, because there was 100 other websites.
Yeah.
People saw what we were doing. There was 100 other websites trying to do the same thing. They could never compete.
Right.
And the funny thing is that we weren't even number one when we started. We were all members on the number one website when we started. So here's a good one for entrepreneurs. We're all hanging on this website, and the guy that owned it was mismanaging it. He would basically not pay his server bill. So you'd go log in the morning sometimes, and the whole site's just crashed or disappeared. And you go, what the hell? Because you know you spent a lot of hours creating content. We're writing how-to articles. We're writing how to race, how to make your car go faster, modifications. We're doing all these things. And the guy wouldn't even do the backups on the stuff, and it would get deleted. So he couldn't even, like, recover it.
Wow.
And so that happened to us twice. And after this two times in a couple months, we went and approached him. We said, hey, we know that you're making money. We could see the advertisements. Yeah. We know what you charge, because we got friends that advertise with you. You know what a server costs. We know what the software costs. Like, what are you doing with the money?
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you paying your bill? You're way profitable on this.
Is he living high on the hog?
He was living off of it. It was his career. And instead of taking that as constructive feedback from the people that were supporting his community the best, he said, if you think you could do a better job, you should go start your own website.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, thanks for the idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody at this table that kind of challenge?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, that was never an idea in my mind, but, you know, I think I can handle this. I can create web pages. I can do graphic design. I can rent a server. I can upload some software.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let me get with my friends on here that are all the leading contributors.
Exactly.
I'm like, dude, we're just going to go do our own thing, because this guy didn't take care of us.
He said it. He, you know, you can say that to 99% of people and nobody's going to do shit. He said it to the wrong person. You know,
dare me.
Like, oh shit, Will's returning.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for the idea. You should send him like $100 after the buyout sign it.
It gets better. So we started it, and you know, I was a little cockier in my mid-20s.
Yeah.
And I remember sending him like a link to it. I said, hey, we started our own website. And he's like, well, when you get 10,000, you know, members like me, you can tell me how to run a website properly.
Yeah.
So I made sure by the end of the year when we hit 15,000, I sent him a screenshot. I said, hey, we're above you now. In less than a year, we took the market space. So, and then from then, we just buried the guy. I mean, we became number one so far ahead of anybody else because we treated people like the right way.
Yeah,
and here's the thing is that most people don't really understand when they build a massive community. Even the things I'm building with 365 Driven, we're in Arete, we have these communities that we're part of.
Yeah.
You have to treat everybody as a customer, even if they're not paying you.
Exactly.
Yet. Mm. And when we have these members, so hundreds of thousands of members that are basically getting free value by contributing, like Facebook, we're all using it for free, but we're customers.
Exactly.
And most people don't realize that. They think, hey, if you're not going to open your wallet, you're not going to spend any money, then you're not a customer.
Yep.
And they treat you like some second-class citizen.
Mm-hmm.
They give you less perks. They talk down to you. They, you know, make you feel like you're just subhuman sometimes.
Yep.
Right.
And then you realize, like, dude, the only reason you're making money is because my ass is showing up here to see your ads. And so many other website owners didn't catch that. And we're like, dude, we have two levels of customers here. We have the advertisers, and we have to protect their interests by not allowing other people to advertise for free. And we have the free consumers, who are the reason we have advertisers.
Exactly. Yeah. The
eyeballs. So we just treated them respectfully and made sure that it was the best experience for both of them. Even the free ones always wanted to upgrade the servers. We started to see a slowdown. We monitored it. We'd upgrade servers months ahead of time, so they would never experience that. because most website owners will like wait till their website's crawling and it's just like suffering. They're like, "Hey, server guy, can you upgrade us now?" And they're reacting.
Yeah,
we were proactive and always staying ahead of that.
Yeah.
So there's things you got to do to make the customer experience worthwhile. I mean, think about Facebook and Instagram when they crash, like everybody's pissed off.
Yeah.
It's a free service. Oh my god.
Like, exactly.
These jerks are doing things bad. Like, and it's free for them.
Yeah. Or if it doesn't upload quick enough, they're like, "What the hell?"
You know? Yeah.
I mean, obviously they didn't ever deal with dial up. That worried about it,
that modem yeah. sound.
If you don't know what dial up is, Google it. You know, or YouTube it and just hear the noise. That was annoying. Plus, having to wait for
you had to turn your shit down. Yeah, like it was like making that weird noise.
Yeah. It's like a fax or something. It was just stupid.
That's a valuable lesson, man. That's so valuable. That we try and preach to our audience is like, you know, go above and beyond.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know what's FS1 doing now. Today is it still got a pretty good
LS1 tech is still around, and that's LS1. Basically the culture. Here, the funny thing is a lot of people think like, okay, you struck lightning once, and you know, it's a one and done thing. It's like, no, actually, I was able to take that exact same business model and go, let's go get in the truck market.
Yeah,
let's go build something for truck guys because they're starting to want to go fast, and there's a lot of aftermarket for them.
There is.
So we took it and we went and created performancetrucks.net with the same business model. Already had relationships with a lot of the advertisers that advertise both sides. We're like, hey, we've got this new thing coming on. You guys want to get involved? We'll still grandfather you in.
Yeah.
Basically, they said, yeah, anything you guys are involved with, we're in.
Yeah.
That site grew to almost 200,000 members.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
So let's talk about the growth, okay? Because we can talk about numbers and that sounds off. How do you grow a community like that? Like, is it just ad dollars? Are you pushing? I mean, how are we getting traffic to a site like that or a forum or whatever it is? Because, I mean, those are obviously impressive numbers. You know, people would die to get 300,000 eyeballs on whatever it is that they're doing, right? So kind of go through that unless there's just some proprietary information or whatever.
No, there's nothing.
I don't want you to open the whole playbook to a certain extent if there's information in there that you utilize still and then you're giving it out to all your competitors. But
so I got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Did you join Instagram because you saw an advertisement for Instagram?
No.
I don't remember. I don't remember why I joined it. I know why I joined Facebook. Remember Bobby?
I joined Instagram because my kids were already getting on it.
So somebody you knew was like, hey, this is a cool app. Check it out.
Yeah. My buddy, I was so against social media. And then my buddy Bobby, me and mine, Kel's friend, he goes and creates an email, trevdoghottestofthehot@hotmail.com is what the email was. And then he comes up. He's like, dude, I'm so sick of taking pictures with you. I can't tag you in any of them. I created a Facebook for you.
That's
and he's
hilarious.
Like, I'm running. And he's like, and we were lifting weights. And so the password was lightweight 150. You know? And so he's like, here it is. He's like, he gave me the login credentials and he was messing with anybody got pictures of Trevor? Tag him in this.
Trevdog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tag him in this and all that stuff. And after about a week or two, I got kind of curious. So I used the username and password, logged in. And then then I transitioned over to Instagram. But I wasn't big on social media first.
So you're the only
person. I got forced into it.
You're the second person I've known that had a similar story for joining. Brad Lee actually joined Instagram because his friends created a troll account of him. And it was called Brad Lee. That's why his Instagram is The Real Brad Lee.
Yeah.
Because the other one was taken by his friends. Because they were posting pictures of him and trolling him and tagging him.
Funny.
And so he's like, I had to join. And you guys have that in common. Get Brad on your show. Be a funny one there for you. But so you basically have to make sure that the value overpowers the I don't know, what do you call it, inconvenience.
Mm.
So if an inconvenience is seeing some ads or seeing an occasional ad on your feed or dealing with someone that's passive aggressive or being a jerk on your website, which we would remove.
Yeah.
Right.
The lower barrier to entry, you just needed to give your email address and you had access to database and archive, all these things that could actually make your car look better, go faster, make you a better driver. Mm-hmm. You can actually meet people in your community that have similar interests and become lifelong friends with them all by just giving us your email address. So it's basically like a lead magnet when you think about that.
Yeah.
And here's the thing is we knew that early on, we could see the server logs. We could see how many people were visiting the site on a daily basis, but we could also compare that by how many people were logging in on a daily basis. So this is where you get the membership because we realized early on, like only 50% of the people coming here are logging in. That means 50% are lurkers, is what we call them. They're just using the content.
Yeah.
They're not really expanding all the things that we unlock from members, but they saw 80% of it.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, in order for us to entice advertisers to spend more or want to be on our website, we need to prove that those people log in and actually have accounts. So how do we do that? So I came up with this idea. I said, okay, let's do some giveaways. Let's do what I call a win-win-win scenario, three-way winning.
Right.
So what we do is we look at a current advertiser and we said, hey, Trevor, we're going to make you the featured sponsor this month if you'll give us a $500 gift certificate that can only be spent with you. And we're going to do a random drawing for someone that's a registered member. And for the month, we're going to talk about your shop. Mm. We're going to post pictures of your product.
Bringing awareness.
Tell you you're a featured thing. You just got to give us a $500 thing. But they're going to spend it right back with you. So that was only applying to people who were registered members.
Yeah.
So they had to register and they saw people getting these things and winning. So it was a win-win-win because you got to be featured. You got a customer. We got somebody to join.
And
we got other people to join.
Got $500.
And the customer that won got a prize.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was zero cost at us and we started raising it. It's like, okay, these other sponsors are like, hey, I want to be involved. And you know, it's like, we can only do 12 a year. So how about you donate a $1,000 gift certificate or something? And they're like, yeah, deal. Because the value for them, like $1,000 is nothing.
$300 or $400 in terms of hard cost.
It's nothing to those guys.
Right?
It's just nothing. Yeah. They wanted to be a part of it. They liked the extra attention. We got the benefit. And after that happened, we had about a 50% normal increase rate on just people signing in because we would do drawings. And sometimes we'd do drawings for the entire membership and also just for the people that did that month.
Mm.
Right? So there was two chances to win.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Just by doing this kind of stuff and growing it.
Get in there a little bit more often gives them an opportunity to win.
And most of the time, people just join. It's just like you said, you knew somebody that was on there and like, hey, you got to come check this out.
Yeah.
And that's the real reason people join is we build communities.
Right.
And here's the other thing I think about leadership that's lacking in a lot of community builders, especially Facebook groups are popular right now. There's a lot of people will start them, but they don't know why they're not growing and they don't understand, like, I think I'm a leader. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what the main problem I see is that the leaders are not accessible and they're not interacting as part of the community.
I agree. Yeah.
If you go in there with an ego and think, like, I'm just super awesome and, like, you guys are in here to bow down to me because I'm super awesome, nobody likes you. They might think you're an influencer and be, like, interested and just want to be curious and hang out, but they don't participate. Yeah. Now, if you get in there and you start participating like a member and answering questions and encouraging people and getting rid of the negative
feedback,
people, you got to get rid of negative people. Even if we did that, you know, hundreds of thousands of car guys, you don't think there was some testosterone or ego in there?
For sure.
But
that car's a piece of shit. Mine is, I've got the big block, or I've got
this. It's worse than that. It's more like, you wouldn't say that to my face. I'm going to kick your ass if I see you at the track in the other side of the country someday.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you got these keyboard warriors like talking shit.
Yeah.
And we would let people like have fun, like talk shit matches. But as soon as it crossed into violent threats, physical threats, or saying, I'm going to show up at your house, we would ban that.
What you should have done is put a boxing match together after that and live stream.
We did that on the drag strip. We did that on the drag strip.
Show your ass up at our live events. Guys, let's see. No,
we actually
we're
built
set
that.
This up.
We had the car WWE basically.
Exactly.
Like, okay, we're having this event in Atlanta. Hey, you're close by. Hey, you're close by. We're going to feature you two guys racing because you guys talk so much trash together.
Yeah.
And we would do that. And you see the car shows now on TV. They do the exact same thing. We were doing that 20 years ago on the internet. So we had magazines articles written about people that they knew that were talking crap.
Yeah.
Like, you guys got to come out to Road Atlanta and do this thing. Like, these guys are going to square off. And that was like pre-social. You notice I built all this stuff before Facebook existed?
Yeah.
So you got
to
understand.
That's what sounds crazy to me is it just sounds like everything that people need to understand that it seems like it's easy to do in today's age because it's so easy to create a group on Facebook or this, but you were doing that prior to it being easy or available.
Yeah.
This is a concept that you saw forums or this, like, and then somebody challenged you. Thank God for that guy.
Yeah.
You know, send him a Christmas card each year while you're on vacation.
Yeah.
Thanks, bro. You know, that's what I do. Just a nice little jab once a year. You know, hey, what are you up to? How's your site doing? You know,
that's true. A lot of people do. They think, if I build it, they will come. And it don't work like
it
that.
Doesn't
you got to engage. You got to be active. You got to be consistent.
Be a member.
Yes.
Be a member.
That goes 100% for today's age in terms of Instagram. If you're, you know, people are just waiting for a video to go viral.
I'm waiting to get discovered.
Yeah, exactly. Again, you're waiting to win the lottery then, basically. Because can it happen? Yeah. But obviously, there's a way to control it a little bit more and have a much higher probability of success through some of the strategies that Tony's talking about, like engaging with people. That's one thing that we take pride in, is answering all the direct messages, commenting back to every single person, saying we appreciate you, thanking them for being. Mm-hmm. We know that they don't have to be there to support us.
That's right.
We already know that. They're choosing to be there to support us and give us a comment or a like or send us a message. And just that type of support, like, why isn't that a two-way street?
Yeah.
You're giving us support. Why wouldn't we want to support the people that are supporting us? It just seems logical.
You know what, though, Trevor, Kale? I'm glad people don't know all these secrets. I used to
makes clients, it a little bit easier for the
my clients. I help them. I go through all this kind of stuff, but I'm glad that there's so many people are lazy.
Yeah.
I'm glad that there's so many people unwilling to do what it takes to get the results that most people don't have.
Yeah.
Because if we all knew this and we all did this, it'd be really hard to be
very
successful.
Difficult. Right? You'd all have to look like Brad Pitt.
Even ugly fuckers like me
can still make it. One for the ugly guys or gals, you know. So. Let me ask you a question, you know, moving into just general entrepreneurship. What do you think one of the biggest thing is that's missing in today's world of entrepreneurship if they're a young or new entrepreneur? You know, what's the step that you think that they're maybe skipping or missing out on or overlooking?
Well, you guys have seen my speeches. My favorite word is consistency.
Mm.
Consistency is what everybody's missing in this world, not even just entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And let me give you my idea of consistency so people can get a context of that.
Yeah.
It means just showing up every damn day to do the job. And most people don't really do that. They work 5 days a week at a normal job. They take 2 days a week off. Yeah. Let's do some simple math just around that. 5 divided by 7 only comes out to a 71%.
Mm.
So you're basically putting in 71% max production per week. While people like me, people like you are willing to do that extra 2 days and get 100% max potential. Now there's a lot of people out there go, well, Tony, I've got family and you know I've got these obligations and I like to kick back and drink beer and hang out on the weekends. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're like that again because there's people like me who will take advantage of those 2 days to get ahead of you. Because if you're operating 71% all out and I can go 100%, I'm going to pass you way far. Now, here's the other thing people think about. Well, I don't think you should work 7 days a week. I agree. I don't think you should work either. I'm the side hustle millionaire. I figured out how to make money with minimal time. The thing is you have to be productive every day of the week.
Mm.
Now, you're on vacation. I'm on a vacation here driving through.
Yeah.
We don't need to be productive because that's a vacation.
Yeah.
But for your normal course of business, show up every damn day and not just show up to work. That's not what I'm talking about. Invest in yourself.
Mm.
If that Saturday and that Sunday requires you to listen to some podcasts, read some books, take some online courses to get some new skills that you can actually monetize and make money, those are the 2 days that you actually have. And when you go, well, I've got kids, well, does that mean millions of people have not been successful with any kids?
Yeah.
Because all I know is a lot of people have kids that are highly successful. So
if anything, that should be a driving factor.
Yeah.
Why not use it to your advantage?
They don't want
to
use that.
I've got kids.
They don't like
so
that.
I want to put in the extra work to provide a better life for my kids. You can, again, a lot of scenarios you can use on either side.
They don't like that one.
You can make it as an excuse or a driving factor.
Right.
And it's really up to you on how do you want to frame it in your own mind, right?
So I like that you mentioned that because that's a popular response to when you ask somebody why they haven't done something. They blame their spouse. Or their kids.
Not Lisa.
Definitely not her.
Not,
They'll blame other people for their situation. And even when you ask people what their purpose is, what is your purpose? I get that if you're younger, you don't have all the questions or the meaning to life, or you may not know what your purpose is. What I want to say is I'm 47. I've had different purposes for each decade of my life.
Yeah.
And that's normal because I'm an evolver.
Your
I look for what I
adjust,
want.
Everything adjusts.
Yeah, but here's the problem is that when you hang around with a bunch of average people, I'm not bashing on average. I grew up lower middle class. I understand these people. I understand. Yeah. I used to think this way. When you ask someone, hey, what's your purpose? And they 9 times out of 10 will be like, I just want to provide for my family. Mm. And that sounds honorable. That sounds like, man, me too. Because average people like to confirm their beliefs. Like, yeah, me too. I'm just doing this for my family.
Yeah.
But you ask that question to me as a business coach, as someone that speaks on stages, I'll say, that's your purpose? No, I'm going to challenge you on that.
I would say that that's their obligation.
That's their duty.
Not their purpose.
That's their duty.
Yeah. But you had a child. You have to take care of a child. Like
being a parent is a duty.
Yeah,
it's a duty. Having a family is a duty.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not your purpose.
Yeah.
That's your job.
Yeah.
But the problem is they never get challenged on that question, because if we're all hanging around with a bunch of average people, and I go, I'm just supporting my family. You go, yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. And then the conversation stops.
Yeah.
But you ask someone like me, and they're like, dude, no, you have a much bigger purpose or mm-hmm. legacy on this planet. Or maybe even in the solar system yeah. nowadays, like understanding that, what is that? What is the impact or legacy that you can create? And every single person that's listening to this or watching this has that within them. Yeah. They may not know it yet,
yeah.
but it's up to you to learn how to extract that and showcase that to the world. And that's where I started to do that. When I left, you mentioned earlier about leaving corporate, 2015 yeah. was the last time I actually had a job. I decided that, yeah, I didn't want to, I was in a car accident and it was a near-death experience. And after I got through that, I realized that, how would I have been remembered that day?
Yeah.
If I would have died, how would I have been remembered? And I started thinking about my car friends and motorcycle friends that had passed away, and it was always the same response. So-and-so was a nice guy.
Yeah.
So-and-so had some cool cars. I would have been remembered as, you know, successful business guy with cool cars, nice guy.
Right.
And it's like, well, that's okay if,
yeah.
if that's what you aspire to be, like yeah. a nice guy with cool cars. But what that told me is that as a competitive person who's driven, is always wanting to do more, I'm not doing enough.
Mm.
If that's all I'm going to be remembered as a nice guy with cool cars, that's like a big neon sign flashing in my face that
yeah.
you're not doing enough in this world, and you're going to die just being a cool guy with, you know, cool cars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said, okay, what do I need to do to impact this world?
Mm-hmm.
How do I impact? I don't know how to impact this world. I've impacted hundreds of people or hundreds of thousands of people. I've built several of my friends' businesses. And the thing is, I've been coaching a lot of my friends, my inner circle of friends, to build businesses. I've built at least a dozen 7- and 8-figure businesses just for my friends.
Yeah.
Just give them the free advice.
Yeah.
Like, here's what you need to do. Here's how you do this. And they were always giving me this feedback.
Right.
You need to be teaching people this. You need to be teaching people this. But I didn't like putting myself in front of cameras. I didn't
yeah.
like my recorded voice.
Yeah.
I didn't like being in front of a crowd.
All the stage typical fright. Shit.
All the fear of criticism.
Yes.
It's like, dude, I got a comfortable life.
Yeah.
Made millions of dollars. Like,
put myself out there?
Why would I do that? I don't need to do that. I'm comfortable. And,
yeah.
And what it was really was, I was just being a bitch.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was avoiding the camera because I had bullies as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I understood ridicule, and I understood if I put myself out there, I'm going to be potentially criticized, and I didn't need to do that. So
yeah.
while I was getting this feedback, I would look for these excuses everywhere
yep.
on why I shouldn't do that. And, oh, a multiple 6-figure job, an engineering degree going to waste.
You know, all those little
don't need to do this.
Yep.
I don't like the whole personal development, like cheesiness of people,
yep.
like, you know, the whole like evangelist people that don't know shit.
Yeah.
New York Times bestsellers have never started a business but teach you how to do things.
Yep.
And it's like, man, the whole industry is about half bullshit.
Yep.
And I was like, I enjoyed some of that, but I don't know if I want to be in that. And so I really started thinking about, what is my purpose? What is my purpose?
Yep.
What is my purpose? Like, man, how am I going to impact people? And there's only two things I really have a lot of passion for, is cars and entrepreneurship, business. Like, I'm,
right.
even yeah. as a kid, I love business. And I could talk about cars and business all day long. We're all into fitness, but I can't talk about fitness past 15 minutes. I'm like, I'm
yeah.
bored.
Yeah.
So I think about
how many miles you run. What do
yeah.
you lift?
Cool. Yeah.
How many days do you work out?
That's enough. No yeah. more. Okay. Stop.
Do you take protein?
Bro.
Yeah.
Bro.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's something you do, not
yeah.
something you love. There's
yeah.
a distinction.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. Business, and I get this feedback from people telling me I should be teaching business. Like, okay, maybe I should be listening to this because I hear it often. And so it's like, okay, what's the best way for me to do this without being on stage, right? Or
mm-hmm.
being on a microphone?
It's like, trying to avoid.
I'll write a book.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to write a book. I used to write for car magazines. It's like, I like to write, so I'll write a book. That's a way to get my information in here to scale to thousands of people.
Yeah.
And I used to say that I'm going to impact thousands of people with this
yeah.
book. So I wrote the book, sold over 1,000 copies the first week. Sold thousands and thousands of copies since then. So I was like, oh, shit. I've impacted thousands of people. So should I say impacting millions of people?
Setting the bar
kinda,
the
kinda,
next level. Right?
Or should I say 10,000? Oh, that sounds dumb. Hundreds of thousands? No, that sounds dumb. So the logical choice is, okay, I need to impact millions of people.
Yeah.
And so the best way I'm going to do that in this world is by giving the gifts of the business knowledge and the passion I have around that to as many people that will be willing to listen and apply that and actually get the results. So that's how I'm going to impact the world. I'm going to
yeah.
teach people confidence, how to stand on camera,
mm-hmm.
get on stage, because yeah. I've overcome all these things,
mm-hmm.
how to start that business, how to scale that business, how to exit that business. Those are things I love.
Yeah.
I could talk about all day. So that's the only way that I can think of right now that I'm going to impact this world.
Yeah.
Now, if this thing grows big enough, I might have some other ideas that can impact this world. But I think it's important to understand, like, what is the gifts or the passions that you have, and how can you apply those for the greater good?
Right.
And most people don't really think about those kind of things.
I honestly, you know, just to add to that, I mean, I think at first, because people, when they start out, they don't have money. So at first, it's all money driven.
Yeah.
And then once you start seeing success and the money starts coming in, you can feel a little empty. You're like, there's got to be more than just this, right? Because, you know, financially, you're good. You were good. You could have just drove off into the sunset, been fine, traveled, whatever, whatever. But there's a hollowness about just money by itself. Money fills up the bank account. We've said this before on the podcast. Impacting others is what fills up the soul. The cool thing is if you can find something to merge those two things, which is what you're doing in terms of some of the business coaching stuff that you're in, right? You're creating an impact and filling up the bank account, and that gives you more purpose, right?
Absolutely.
And I just think that that's – and again, it's fine at first if you want to just, you know, focus on money, whatever. I'm guilty of that. You know, I focused on money, and a lot of people will they only say that because they have it now. And it's like, well, we're telling you from experience. A lot of successful people, you know, that's why there's still people that are successful that commit suicide. Mm. Money's not the answer.
Nope.
They had no purpose outside of money. They felt hollow. They felt alone. But they weren't doing anything, one, to progress themselves. They weren't evolving anymore. They stopped evolving as an individual. Happiness is evolution and progress. When you're seeing progress in life, you feel happy. That's just the way it is. Now, money is an easy thing to measure. So a lot of people, I make 50 grand a year. Next year, I made 60. So they feel happy that they're seeing progress, right? But eventually, when you get to the point, you exit a company, you've got millions of dollars, you're like, okay, cool. I guess I can have a goal of starting another one and exit at 10 million.
Yeah.
But again, it starts again. You have to evolve as a person. And if where you're at right now in life is just a money thing, cool. You're going to hit a certain point and then you're going to want to evolve out of that just being your purpose, right? And you're going to want to find something to where you're impacting other people, because that's really where you elevate to a new level as just as a human being, right?
Yeah, you nailed it, man. I love that you talked about the stages, because because people will watch the things that we do or say and they'll go, well, I don't have this big purpose, or I don't have this dream or vision of making millions of dollars yet, especially if you're in your 20s or your 30s. But I want to explain my purpose through the decades so you can understand where this came from.
Yeah.
So I would say that in my teens, I was just trying to fit in, right? High school, you're just trying to fit in. You're trying to be accepted by people. You had a lot of friends that were more affluent than you, and you're just trying to be accepted by people and playing sports and doing things to trying to gain popularity.
Doing what the group is doing.
A little bit of status, trying to grow a little bit of that.
Yeah.
In my 20s, going from blue collar to going to school for 7 years at night, working in restaurants as a waiter, then eventually managing restaurants, I was trying to just basically escape the middle class.
Mm.
I knew that that was a dead-end street. I worked with these people in the chemical plants. I got to see people that were 60 years old still with the exact same job as I had in my 20s.
Yep.
I said, this is not what I want to do. I needed to figure out how to escape the middle class, so I committed to doing that. And it was just all about trying to get qualified and validated. So I always felt like I was counted out. I'm a half Japanese American, and I grew up in a small town which had a lot of resentment from World War II Japanese people. Mm-hmm. So I got to see the side of racism and things like that with my mom and even me, because people knew who my mom was.
Yeah.
And so I understood that I need to go validate and prove something to myself, because when you look at the parents and they're like, you got the rich kids you're competing with the brand new cars. I mean, literally our high school parking lot looked like a new car dealership.
Yeah.
And when you start to think about that, it's like, oh, how do I do this? Well, I make good grades. I make straight A's. I can outrun them. I can do these things to try to get better. Mm-hmm. So I was very competitive always to try to get ahead. But 20s was all about validating that and improving myself to be able to make money to get out of the middle class. Right. 30s, I'd already made it. So I started my company in 28, and I started doing very well. I started making six figures in my engineering salary, six figures in the side businesses, doing very well. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to turn on the gas and like just make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so my 30s was all about chasing money.
Yep.
Made a lot of sacrifices. I mean, Lisa could tell you, like, I was working offshore, working international. Anywhere that was paying me the big bucks, I was willing to go do like a mercenary just to kind of stack money and have an awesome lifestyle.
It was money driven at that
point. And that's all
so
I was thinking about.
The money was.
Like I invested in myself. I figured it out. And now I'm going to turn it up. Okay. Now 40s, I started thinking about, man, my health is starting to fade. If you guys would have seen me when you're closer to your age, as I was 35 to 40, 39, my late 30s, I was actually letting myself go. I had all these like shoulder injuries near the lower back. I was about 20 pounds overweight, no muscle at all. And I was always making these excuses on maybe I'm just getting older. So I was kind of just getting lazy. I was getting lazy because I had this money, right?
Well, again, that if you're getting older, you can use it as an excuse. Totally. Or like, shit, I'm getting old. I need to start getting it into gear so that it doesn't get worse.
Right? Yeah. So at 40, that's a pivotal milestone for everybody. I mean, she just turned 40 herself. And you think about it, you go, okay, we got everything we need. And Christmas comes up, we don't even buy anything for each other because we already have everything we need. Kind of that situation. Yeah. It's like, how much money do we really need? And I started thinking about, man, is there legacy? Like, what am I teaching my son? Like, what are we, where is this going? How is this going to end? And I said, you know, I just need to get back into shape. So I started at 40, largely with her encouragement. And I just, you know, 7 years in, I'm still doing it. I'm still investing every single day and getting better and learning new things about business, building awesome networks with people like you guys. And it's just, I want to give back. I want to learn as much as I can and keep giving back because that's who I am. I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me down to my core, who am I? I'm a teacher. I'm a coach.
Yeah.
And it's been like that since I was a kid, guys. If even when I was skateboarding as a kid, junior high,
somebody had a kickflip, I would learn tricks.
Yeah, I was sponsored by surf shops, and I would learn these tricks, and I would fall on my face 100 times and be covered. I'm covered with scars because I'm kind of a daredevil kid, adrenaline junkie, but I would be so excited to learn it, master it, and teach it.
And then when somebody else lands it, the kickflip or this, you're like, you know, like you get stoked too.
Dude, it's awesome. And so many people miss that.
Yeah.
They learn and invest, and they fall on their face, and they master it, and then they go silent. And to me, there's no true success without a succession plan. If you're not teaching other people what you learn to achieve success, you're not successful in my eyes. I don't care how much money you got in the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And that, you know what? That's why I love when we hear the statements of like entrepreneurship is what's changing the world for the good, man. Because, you know, your impact that you're making, it doesn't just stop there, man. Like they start impacting other people. Oh, and they start, you know, those businesses you help build provide jobs. And then those leaders become better leaders from knowing you. And then their employees become better leaders. And you know what I mean? Just continues to
compound. Domino effect.
Yeah.
And it's really cool that we get to talk about this stuff and we get to know each other.
Yeah.
And I'm really thankful for the groups to be able to bring us together like that. And I know you got some great groups too, man. You should tell our audience about
them.
I know we're registered in the 365 Driven, man.
Is so. That's what it is, right? 365 Driven Facebook group, right? Yep. So if somebody's wanting to reach out to you, how do people find you? You know, what's your Facebook, your Instagram, all that stuff?
Easiest way to find me is on my website. It's 365driven.com.
Yeah.
And you'll find links to my book. You'll find my podcast, which is called 365 Driven, and the entrepreneurship group. We got two. We got one that's free, about 3,500 members right now. It's called 365 Driven Entrepreneurs on Facebook. Look it up. Apply if you're not too spammy or not too passive aggressive of an asshole. We'll let you stay in the group.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he already taught you that lesson earlier in the podcast.
We get rid of negative people. Dude,
I love it too because you push people, man, like to get uncomfortable. Like, let's do a video challenge because people are so uncomfortable doing it. Let's do a video challenge every day this week, you know, or this month.
Yeah.
And so it's cool.
Discomfort. When you start to seek things that create fear, when you start to think about what causes discomfort, even if it's an uncomfortable conversation with somebody you've been avoiding, go after those things. That's where growth happens. Yeah. When you start to think about what is it that makes me fear? Oh, like for me, that was public speaking. I didn't even realize I had a fear of public speaking until I stood up at a conference with 1,000 people in the room. And I started to feel the physiological things like your chalky voice, your mouth dry in the swamp.
Yeah.
You get the armpit sweats. You start feeling the droplets on top of your head. Yeah. Like,
did your mouth ever dry out?
Dude? Oh, yeah.
First time I spoke, mouth. I was like, is there a water explosion?
This was in a matter of seconds. Like I wasn't even on the stage. I was. Yeah. The guy was asking a question. I had a good answer. I raised my hand, and he called on me first. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so I got this. I got this. And
hand the mic.
No, dude, it's even better, Trevor. It's even better. So I was near the front of the stage, and I had the answer, and I blurted it out, and he goes, hold up. Let's get this guy a microphone so everybody in the room could hear his answer.
Oh, God.
And so I'm still sitting in my chair. Everybody's looking at me.
Yeah.
And it's a big room, dude.
Yeah, too much time to think as the microphone's making your way.
Little old lady with the microphone, like walking as slow as possible. It felt like an eternity. It was probably like 30 seconds. And I'm watching her. Everybody's watching me, and he's waiting me, and I'm starting to get my core temperature starting to rise. Oh, what the hell is this? And I was actually kind of fascinated. I was kind of fascinated. It's like I found a new fear.
Yeah.
And so I take the microphone with my calm, cold, sweaty hand and give my shaking voice answer, and everybody applauds, and I sit down, and for the next 5 minutes, I'm wiping my fucking face with the cloth napkin because I'm sweating.
You're like, AC?
I'm like putting my suit jacket back on so you don't see my armpits. Yeah. And I was like, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. And but so then after you leave, you're like, man, that was a rush.
And you know what I said? I think I need to get better at public speaking. So I was like, well, the real answer is like, I don't want to ever be in that situation again. But most people be like, well, I'll just avoid putting myself in that situation. I was like, I don't want to ever be in that situation again, underprepared is the way I think. Mm-hmm. So I went and prepared. I joined Toastmasters and I took public speaking. I competed in public speaking events and now I get paid to stand on stages. Yeah. So I took something that was a fear to something I get paid for. So the lesson there is go after those fears and figure out how to do them. You might actually uncover something you're good at.
Profit from your fears.
I never thought I'd be standing on stages. I just wanted to get a general
tagline.
You know, be good enough to like stand up in a room and answer a question. So you never know what you're going to uncover. Yeah.
That's so true.
That's great.
Tony killed it today.
I know.
I ain't going to lie about it. Tony fucking crushed.
he brings value, dude.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Like, guys, you definitely reach out to Tony. Connect with Tony. One, he's just a good dude, you know, first and foremost. And, you know, then there's obviously a list of things that he's great at, you know, as we talked about in terms of the business coaching stuff. Go to 365driven.com. Check out Tony. You know, he's got videos and all that good stuff on his Facebook group. You guys will get value. It's all over the place, whether it's the book, whether it's the group, whether it's the website. I mean, we can just call him Mr. Value.
No kidding. You know,
instead of Tony Whatley, we'll just call him Tony Value.
All right, Trent Dog.
He texts me the other day. He's like, Tony's in town. He wants to come do a podcast. I'm like, heck yeah, dude. Tony always brings value. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So the exact words.
Guys, make sure that you're sharing this information with people that you care about, okay? We just barely had an episode talking about when you find something that works or something that benefits you. Tony just talked about how impacting other people feel, how good it feels, right?
Always.
And so if you guys are getting impacted hearing something like this, make sure you're sharing it with your friends and your family, because again, they can pull you down, you know, just as we talked about having a group of average people. So if you're the one in your group trying to elevate, you need to be the leader in the group and make sure that you're taking charge and helping that group elevate by sharing information that can benefit them as well. Now, if they choose not to, that's on them, right? Then obviously you need to start joining groups and meeting new people. You know, we've met some amazing people in the RTA group, and Tony's one of them, right? Tony has his own group, and there's probably tons of amazing people. I'm telling you guys, get with groups of people that are like-minded if your friends aren't receptive to the information that you're trying to give them, because there are people out there just like you trying to do big shit just like you that are trying to evolve. So guys, make sure you're rating and reviewing the podcast, and we'll finish off with the review like we always do at the end of each one of our podcasts. This is from Richard Tilley. I know this individual. I can't say personally because we haven't met in person, but we've communicated a lot over direct message. He owns a company called Ink Labs. I think it's in Idaho. He's a good dude. Good dude. So his review, real education. These are things that should be taught in school. These guys come back to back with real advice to navigate you through the insane world of entrepreneurship. If you want to make it far, less errors on your journey, listen up. So, Richard, dude, we appreciate you leaving that review. I've appreciated the communication that we've had. We've even shared phone numbers, so we text back and forth to each other.
That's cool.
So he's just a solid dude. So anyways, we hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Make sure you guys have a kick-ass day.